The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
You are beautiful. Take a look at yourself.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk Is Jericho.
Talk Is Jericho,
starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the Pot of Thunder. And rock and roll, the spell you're under will be broken by Chris Jericho. And it's Friday.
Lick it up, lick it up. Ah, it's only right now.
Lick it up, lick it up.
The remedy for boredom has arrived. Let's go for a ride. He's the man called Sting. He's the man called Sting. He's the man called the Ambrose. And he's got a normal sized nose. He's the man called Sting. He's the man called Sting. He's the man called Ambrose. And he spouts literal prose. Woo! All right, literal prose. You'll never hear that anywhere but right here on Talk Is Jericho. How in the hell are you, Jericho-holics? Let me tell you this. Part 2 with Dean Ambrose is coming up. We're talking all about The Shield. You'll also hear the real story about the Mick Foley Twitter feud, why that started, what it was supposed to be. We talk about the Attitude Era, how some of it wasn't all that great. Dean's Hell in a Cell match will be discussed with Seth Rollins, and Dean's got some great Paul Heyman stories of his own. Great conversation on the way with Dean Ambrose. Today is episode 99. Next Wednesday, episode 100. Who will the guest be? Who could it possibly be?
You people are dynamite!
We're going to tell you at the end of the show. But first, I got to say thanks to all of you guys for doing your holiday shopping through my Amazon links. It's the easiest way to support the show. And every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to you to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk Is Jericho button. You can get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon. Like, for instance, the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? It's bursting up the charts. Such a huge, huge step for us. The new single is Do You Want to Start a War, the title track. Go on YouTube right now and watch the new video. It is amazeballs. Plus, you can get my new book, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea, the third best-selling autobiography in my collection. You need to have this in your stocking stuffer. And listen, you can buy whatever you want. You can take care of your entire holiday shopping list at Amazon. You can find anything. You know that. And hey, the truth about my using Amazon links, you can buy whatever you want, won't cost you anything extra, no hidden fees, all challenges. So if you happen to be doing some Amazon shopping, you can help out the show in the process. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk Is Jericho button, bookmark it so you can get to those links in one easy click. All right. We are currently on the road. It's a little bittersweet today because the Cinderblock Party Tour with Texas Hippie Coalition and Shaman's Harvest ends tonight. Tonight is the last show of this leg of the tour at the State Theater in St. Pete, Tampa area. Thank you, everybody who came and saw the Cinderblock Party. Such a killer tour. Last night's show in Orlando was amazing. Sold out the show in Fort Lauderdale. Sold out the show in Joplin. Kudos to all of you who came and rocked with us. And to all the new fans we made, thanks to joining the party. It is a party, and next year we are going overseas with the Cinderblock Party World Tour in 2015. We're taking along the Dirty Youth starting March 4th in Belfast, Ireland, hitting Cork, Dublin, then going all throughout the UK, Manchester, Glasgow, London, Bristol, Brighton, Exeter, Southampton, so many cool towns. We've played almost all of them in the UK, but we love to play as much as we can there. Plus, we're heading over to mainland Europe, a couple shows in Germany, Munich, that's the German pronunciation, it's not München. Also going to Rochum, we're going to Mannheim, Paris, Platin, Switzerland. All information, FozzyRock.com. Go there for ticket info and for Fozzy VIP tickets. You're not going to want to miss our VIP experience. It's one of the best in the biz. Ask around to anybody who's gone. We always have a good time with our VIPs, and we have a good time at all of our shows. You won't be disappointed if you do this VIP package. And one of the songs that we're doing live, which has become a big hit, is One Crazed Anarchist, which is funny because we've done a Fozzy F logo that's similar to Dean Ambrose's logo because he's got the anarchist gimmick going as well. So I thought it'd be apropos on part two of the Dean Ambrose show to play One Crazed Anarchist from Do You Want to Start a War. If you come to any one of our shows, you will hear us play this song. It's a rocker. It's a pounder. It's an anthem. Check it out. Here it is. Crank it up.
Voiceless screams.
Say goodbye.
securing me.
One crazy anarchist. 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 One crazy anarchist.
Yeah, that's a cranker, right? You like it? Hit us up on the Twitter at Fozzie Rock, at Talk is Jericho, and let us know what you think about the tune, and let us know if you came to the Cinderblock Party Tour. All right, we got Dean Ambrose coming up, but first, originally, earlier in the week, if you follow at Talk is Jericho on the Twitter, you know that Egypt was supposed to be on the show. Had a little bit of a falling out with Egypt. There's a little bit of a contractual dispute, so Egypt will not be here this week. I apologize. He's a little bit hard to deal with now, especially since he's had a little bit of fame and fortune and notoriety. But what I did is I found this website called therichest.com. And I don't know if it's a good website, bad website, whether they're making everything up or whatever it is, but I found this article. It's 15 former WCW stars. Where are they now? And I haven't read this article yet. I thought I would just read it to you live here on the air, and we'll find out where everybody is. So number 15, Bill Goldberg. And it says he hosts his own podcast. Well, duh, Who's Next is right here on podcast1.com. Go check that out. It says Bill's been doing Who's Next for a while. It can be found free on iTunes and deals with a variety of guests and topics from sports to movies to television. And to this date, Goldberg has still not ruled out a return to the ring. Okay. Number 14, Sean Stasiak. He's a chiropractor and a motivational speaker. Nice. It says he became a chiropractor in 2007 and is currently working in the Dallas area. And he aspires to put an end to bullying with his goals to speak to young children in school. Okay? So if you're in the Dallas area and you want to do some chiropractic care, go see Sean. Lex Luger works for the WWE and author. I didn't know he was in the WWE. Says he has written his first book in 2013, Wrestling with the Devil, the true story of a world champion professional wrestler, his reign, run, and redemption, discussing the trials and tribulations Lex endured during his wrestling career. And in 2011, he started to work for the WWE, working in their wellness policy, working behind the curtain, aiding the superstars with nutrition, how to maintain a healthy body. Wow, that's interesting. Okay. Best of luck to Lex. Dean Malenko, road agent for the WWE. We all know that. He's my road agent whenever I'm there because no one else will deal with me. Everyone else thinks I'm a pain in the ass, except for my old buddy Dean. Conan works for AAA in Mexico and is the co-host of the MLW radio podcast. Okay, I don't know where you can find MLW, but just go Google that. He's got his wrestling radio podcast, and he works as part of the creative team in AAA Wrestling, and I believe he's involved with Lucha Underground as well, which if you haven't seen it yet, on El Rey Network, you should go watch it. It's very cool, very different. It's pure Lucha Libre. My buddy Chavo Guerrero works there, Talk is Jericho alumni, as well as John Morrison. He's Johnny Mundo. Norman Smiley. Remember the Big Wiggle. He's a WWE trainer in the FCW division. He might be a good guest for Talk is Jericho. I might try and get him. He's behind the scenes. He's a trainer in FCW/NXT, and he gets great reviews there. So he's my buddy. I actually helped him get that job. He's a good man, great worker. Crowbar, remember him? He's a physical therapist. Okay. He has focused more on his career in physical therapy after leaving WCW in 2000. In May, he opened his own physical therapy practice, which has done tremendously well. All right. Good story for Crowbar, whose real name is Chris Ford. Good old Schiavone, Tony Schiavone, baseball play-by-play broadcaster. I've heard that. He's a commentator for the Gwinnett Braves in the International League and has his own radio production company, Blind Dog Sports. And he enjoys the play-by-play aspect of doing baseball. I believe he's with the Gwinnett Braves. All right, Chuck Palumbo. I know a little bit, Chuck. He's a motorcycle builder, musician, and gym owner. I know Chuck plays guitar in a pretty killer band in San Francisco. I believe it's called Three Spoke Wheel. He's the guitarist and backing vocalist. He builds motorcycles and has created motorcycles for several WWE superstars, including Batista, Rey Mysterio, and Chavo Guerrero. What began as a passion turned into a full real-time business called CP Customs. So if you're in the San Diego area, look him up. Ernest Miller, actor, karate teacher. I remember Ernest was in The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, and he's also a karate teacher, which he started doing. That's how Eric Bischoff met him in the first place. Lance Storm, owner of the Storm Wrestling Academy. We know that up in Calgary if you want to check that out. You've got to Google the Storm Wrestling Academy. It's the only wrestling academy I endorse. And yes, to answer your question, Lance will be on Talk Is Jericho. We tracked the interview already. It's amazing. It's a two-parter. It's just a matter of finding the right spot for it, but you'll probably hear it within the next month, I would say.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Sitting here with Dean Ambrose as we continue our conversation. All I want to talk is Jericho. So how did you like working with Dusty Rhodes during developmental? Did you learn a lot from him?
I never liked doing every week we'd have like, you know, out of communication with Dusty Rhodes, which is basically like, yeah, everybody promo comes up and does like a minute promos or whatever.
Wait, it was called Art of Communication?
Art of Communication was Dusty Rhodes, which they probably still do down there. And I'm sure it's fine for some people. And they, you know, they film them and they send them to the office and come up with ideas and stuff, I guess. You know, so I guess there might be a benefit. But to me, promo class is my hell. I don't want to be there. I think it's stupid. I don't think this is even a thing that should be done. This is not how it's done. You know, and this is the part of the developmental that I really like revolted against. I was not into it. I felt weird and I kind of refused to participate. Like I would come up and just like make a stupid joke. Like I would never do anything real. It was probably my worst like attitude that I had would on those Wednesday mornings. I'd be just sitting there like, this is stupid. Christ.
What would you have to do? They'd say go up and cut a promo on
and I would come up and just make like jokes or cut a promo about McDonald's or some, you know,
whatever.
Literally trying to show them that I was putting in no effort on purpose and just burying myself further. For whatever reason, but I couldn't take it seriously because I just thought this was such a stupid idea. Like, this is not how promos are done. But then I go on the TV show and I can cut a freaking promo. Right. So I'm like, I can, but I'm intentionally going like, I don't need to do this. This is how I'm going to show you, which is just how I handled it at the time. So that was, you know, his role in the training, but he booked the shows at FCW. Now I'm actually real proud of a lot of the work that I did on the TV shows at FCW, because, you know, I didn't know if I was ever going to get out of there. And as far as, I mean, this is a stop on the way, but, you know, we had a chance to do some really cool stuff. And a feud with Seth there, and a feud with William Regal there. That was like where we had two matches. But it was one of my favorite things I've ever done. You know, probably nobody ever, not a lot of people have seen it. But it's kind of one of the things where when you have the final blow off thing, and it was the last. Our blow-off to the feud was the last match of the last ever FCW television show, and it was one of those things, because NXT started right after that. And it was one of those things where, you know, I mean, it's only 200 people in the building, but you know that's what everybody came to see, kind of thing.
Sure.
And it's a different feeling, and it's a satisfactory feeling, even if it's on a small scale, where, like, you know you've, like, built to this thing, and it's, like, it's real to you, because you've just put it there, you know? And so being able to do those things and kind of having a...
Because Regal was a big fan of yours from the start. As a matter of fact, when I was... So when would that be? About 2011 or so? 2012?
Yeah.
When I was still a heel and Regal came to me, he's like, you know, you should do something with this Dean Ambrose guy. If they bring him in there, you should ask to work with him or something. He's like, he's really, really good. He was trumpeting your skills right from when he first met up with you there.
Yeah, he was really vital to me, like, you know, making sure that... kind of elbowing people and being like, you seen this guy?
Exactly.
You know? Like, he was real...
keep an eye on this guy.
Real vital to me in that sense. And probably a lot of guys.
Foley, too, though. Remember, didn't you have some kind of a tweet feud with Mick? Weren't you guys kind of working an angle? Or maybe he was working on his own, but there was something going on there.
It was going to be a real thing. It was That was the beginning of it being
so
a
they
real
told
thing.
You start working on this.
Yeah, it's well, the whole story is like it was my idea. It was something that I like pitched to do this angle with him. Like you know, I'm of the generation of guys that, you know, grew up watching when we were, you know, 12, 13, you know, Mick Foley was, you know, falling off stuff.
And attitude.
There was ECW and all kinds of stuff like that. And, you know, in the indies and stuff, you know, dudes are, you know, falling off ladders and mm-hmm. getting hurt. And, you know, the kids are doing backyard wrestling and all that stuff. And
emulating,
you know,
hardcore wrestling.
Yeah. And like I did a lot of hardcore stuff mm-hmm. before I got here, like a lot. And, so like, my idea for it was that, you know, Mick influenced this whole generation of kids to like kill themselves kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to like make him pay for it, which mm-hmm. that was the concept. And like Hunter bought, like kind of bit on it pretty hard. He liked it.
So you pitched it?
Yeah. And they were going to, and Mick was into it and they were going to go with it. And I was like, oh my God, this is...
That was going to be your debut.
Yeah, like, because I was like, this is a good angle. This is like, it actually, in retrospect, it was almost like too real. You know, it could have been
backfired, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. But, so they wanted it to be like, they wanted it to be unique and real or whatever. So they wanted to start in like a Twitter war. And I'm like, I've never done Twitter. So they're like, we'll make one for you. So they made one. And actually, they made one for like all the FCW guys at the time to mm-hmm. try to like, because that was like a top secret thing to try to veil it. And say, it would be weird if I just popped up on Twitter. They made all the FCW guys get one at once and said, all the FCW guys have Twitter now. And I was just, I went in with like 12 other people and just kind of slipped in to make it seem less obvious. Yeah. Like, that's how much thought was put into it. So then I have no idea how to use this thing. I'm like trolling people and just trying to get people to pay attention to me mm-hmm. or follow me or whatever. And just having fun with it. And then, you know, they give me ideas for lines to shoot at him or whatever. And, you know, I give him a couple random insult tweets or whatever until people, you know, dirt sheets or whatever start biting on it. Like, ooh.
Yeah.
Young developmental Jerkoff said this. Mick Foley responds. And then started going back and forth a little more. And there was a little bit there. And then we did this bit where, like, I would come up to him at the, like, the WrestleMania after party or Hall of Fame after party or something. And like kind of confront him and start talking trash to him, which we did, and people would film it on their cell phones or whatever.
Wow.
And it actually came out kind of cool. Like, I just walked up to him, and I don't even think I'd actually met him like face to face and said hello. I just knew like he was going to be in the lobby at such and such time, and just go up to him while he's signing autographs and just
start messing with him.
Yeah, and say whatever you want. And I just kind of barged through everybody and started talking all kinds of trash. And you know, in a That's pretty great. Realistic sense, it was cool, and people were,
like you said, people filming it on their phones. Yeah,
and nobody knew who I was, so people thought I was really just some ass mm-hmm. just poking at legendary great Mick Foley. What are you doing? What are you? So people were like, "Get out of here, man! Get your ass out of here! How dare you!" And I'm like, "God!" And it was a really short but cool, uncomfortable, awkward scene, and I was like, "Oh, that was pretty cool." And 'cause I remember I was sitting at catering the next morning. At Access or something, Mark Henry and somebody else, and he says, "Man, you hear what happened to Mick last night? Somebody come up to him in the lobby talking about you killed the business and you ruined a generation of kids or something." Said, "Man, you know what he should have done? Well, he said, I crack his damn head over. I seen that. I said, Mick, you should have. If we see him again, I'll take care of him." He had no idea that it was me.
Or
that it was
that's a good Mark Henry, by the way.
Yeah, and it had gotten around that it was like a real thing that happened. I'm just sitting there right next to him, and he has no idea that I was the guy who did it. And I was like, it's working. But, you know, essentially, it just when he went to get his physicals and...
This is right when he had the concussions
and,
or whatever.
To get cleared to actually, you know, work the angle and work a match, he couldn't get cleared, and that was kind of a... the end of the road for him. So it's left to dream match.
Wow.
To dream match. That
play it on WWE 2015 on the video game.
Yeah, I mean, it was this close to happening, but we'll never
How did
never
you
happen.
Feel when it went down?
Oh, I was pretty bummed. I was like, oh, man. Like, I thought that was like the one
that was your
perfect
end.
Moment thing. But I was like, something else will happen, you know. And it gave me enough buzz where it kind of made me a little bit more of a known kind of Not yeah. You know, it just had to get more people talking about me, a little bit more eyes on me.
You got some focus on you.
Yeah, so, you know, there was a positive in it, you know. It gave me a little,
little steam.
A little more, you know, pre-Shield buzz, you know, so.
Then how did the Shield come about then?
We were at TVs. I was doing, you know, a lot of TVs and a lot of house shows.
Yeah, because I remember seeing you before that. I remember we were talking about your jacket or something like that. Remember? Like you had some kind of a jacket, like a leather jacket.
And yeah, I can't
remember. You were asking me something about what do you think I should wear or something.
What you remember talking
that?
About. Yeah.
You wanted to get some kind of a jacket made or something or yeah, should I just wear a normal jacket? And
yeah, I guess we were just talking about cool jackets.
Yeah, so, yeah. So,
we're guys who wear cool jackets.
Yeah, so, you know, we got cool good jackets, jacket game. Man. Yeah, there's a jacket conversation.
How do you feel about this
plaid? Actually, I like it. He's got right a plaid now. Jacket, kind of got a, we call it a toque in Canada, is what you're wearing right now, is a hat. And you got the plaid jacket. Well, you know what I really like, I've been noticing, is your belt buckle.
First, oh, you like that, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At first, I thought it was Eddie from Iron Maiden, then it's a skull wearing a cowboy hat.
Yeah, well, actually, I got it for a Halloween costume.
Okay.
So it was a dead cowboy.
Nice.
And then I was like, you know, this is pretty cool. I'm gonna keep this.
I like it.
And a lot of people are like, oh, God, that's, what are you, like, walking around with this giant cowboy belt buckle? But I'm like, I don't know, I kind of like it. And I find that, you know, a belt buckle will really set off the whole outfit. Like, you can wear a t-shirt and jeans. But if you got a sweet belt buckle, it's instant biz cash, you know?
Instant biz cash.
This thing, I wasn't sure how I felt about it because I was like, I don't want to look like I'm from Portland or something. Or
yeah,
like,
but
it's like a Daniel Bryan kind of thing. It's the first time I've worn it, actually.
It's
a
green plaid flannel shirt. I like it, especially since it's raining. It's pissy outside because we're in Scotland and Glasgow.
Yeah, it's very warm, comfortable.
I wasn't thinking grunge. I'm thinking it's just kind of a cool, it's a cool look because no one's wearing it right now. You're bringing it back.
Yeah, it might have. Yeah, I might keep this in the regular rotation.
Do it.
Yeah.
I think so. Maybe even wear it on TV.
Maybe.
I think that could work. And the toque, like with the toque, maybe make a Dean Ambrose toque.
Yeah, they probably have one.
It's funny. I love the Dean Ambrose Anarchy sign. On our new Fozzy record, we have a song called One Crazed Anarchist, and I made a design before I knew yours, which is the Anarchy sign, but the two lines go off, so it looks like an F. So it's the Anarchy sign. So people are like, that's Dean Ambrose's logo. I'm like, well, I didn't steal it from Dean.
Oh.
It's Sex Pistols, man. I'm sure there's enough room for both of us to use it.
Okay, yeah, I didn't make up mine either. Somebody else designed it. I don't sign any of this stuff, so nobody get mad.
No, it looks good, though. It's nice. Yeah, it's good. So we're talking about The Shield. You're doing TVs. Did you ever think at some point, like, am I ever going to get out of here, or were you still cool being down in FC Dub?
Oh, no, I was, like, starting to lose it a little
get
bit.
Get me the hell out of here.
Yeah, because I kind of thought that maybe my opportunity had passed kind of thing. And,
right.
I wasn't on any of the NXT TVs, and it wasn't on WWE TV. So there's a period of time where I was just kind of, like, in a weird limbo.
Mm.
I was not on anything. And was doing house shows, and, you know, that gets old after a while because nobody knows who you are. So
right.
Every single night's like, who's this guy? And you're like, but, you know, so it's cool because you're working for WWE, but it's like, God, every night. Actually, there's a funny story about that. It was the first time I ever realized that, like, the Paul Heyman Kool-Aid is a real thing, and you got to be wary of it, I guess, you know? Not that, you know, nothing to be wary of, but we were somewhere, like, house show in New York or something. I think I was working with McGillicuddy at the time, Curtis Axel, but I had a house show match, and Heyman was there, and he's like, that was a great match, good, smart match, but yeah, that was, you know, whatever, cool, yeah, good. And I'm like, yeah, I said something like, yeah, going out there every single night, starting from scratch or something, but you know, I just made something like that, like, oh, thank you, yeah, you know, it's tough, we gotta go out there and start from scratch every night, but you know, it's cool. He's like, oh, this is the greatest time of your career, you're gonna miss these days. You're going to miss these days where nobody knew who you were. People come out, they want to see the stars. Oh, where's Rey Mysterio? Where's John Cena? Where's the stars? Yeah. You go out there every single night, and you get over. I'm here every night. You come out, oh, who's this guy? Blah, blah, blah. And then you get over. You're not going to have that luxury. You're going to be. There's going to be a time when you're just going to walk out, and, oh, Dean Ambrose is here, he's a big star. They're just going to want to see you walk around the ring and parade and do your entrance. You have to go out there every night. You're going to remember this. You're going to remember the, man, you're going to look back and say, man, I remember those days when I used to have to go out there and earn it from the first bump to the last bump. And I'm like, for and I felt that, like, you know, shot right in my butt, just course through your veins, the Heyman Kool-Aid, and I'm like, yeah, that's right. And I wanted to, like, walk into talent viewing and be like, that's right, Big Show.
Yeah.
You're a big star, but I go out there every night and I get over. That's right. I never want to be on TV ever again. And then that wears off, and then the next day you're like, no, actually, I do hope I get on TV.
That was Paul, though, at ECW. He'd be backstage. Like, he'd have a team meeting. You are the misfits. You are the lost island of misfit toys. Nobody else in the world will take you, but I take you. I embrace you. I love you because you work harder. You're better. WWE doesn't want you. I want you. WCW doesn't want you. I want you. Like you say, when you're done, you wanted to go out there and say, you know, I'll cut your head off with a sword. You cut my head off with a sword. We make $50 each, but it's worth it because Paulie loves us. You know, that's exactly the same vibe, man.
Yeah, man, he's got that. It's real, man. He could sell, you know, snow to an Eskimo.
He should be a motivational speaker.
Yeah, you were there during like the coolest period to have been there, probably.
Yeah,
like,
it was right before they expanded and they got too big for themselves. But it was right after, like, everyone wanted to go there. So I was only there for about 6 months in 95.
Yeah, and it was like the cool place to be kind of thing.
Exactly. If you could make it in there, you can make it anywhere. You know, like it was right after Chris and Dean and Eddie had been there. So I was kind of the new, like, you know, high flyer or technical wrestler, dungeon Stu Hart guy. But it was really cool. You know, Taz, Sabu, Shane Douglas, Scorpio, Pitbull number two. He was awesome. He was a great worker too. I got a chance to work with all those guys, and the crowds were hot. Like, they're small buildings, but they're sold out.
Yeah.
And the word got around. You know what I mean? It was like you said, like being an indie band where, you know, you're coming out of the scene, like Seattle or LA in the 80s or whatever, but this band, this guy has some buzz.
Yeah, that period of time, and like there, and, you know, that whole period of time is like very fascinating to me. That whole, like.
Did you watch ECW?
Oh, yeah. I was huge. I fell in love with it instantly. Right. Like, the whole. I think I started watching that probably. I think you would have been gone, but it was probably like late 96 or early 97.
Yeah,
I was about 12. It was like kind of in the build up to their first
pay-per-view. Getting on TNN, I think it was.
Yeah, it was. It would come on TV in this little. On some whack channel at like midnight on a Friday or something, and I have to like mess with the antenna to like to see it, but it was, you know, it was like
stand a certain way.
Yeah, it was like something cool was going on, but
well, when, you know, it's one of those things that when they say it was a revolution, and it kind of gets poo pooed now, especially in our company. But if you were there, there was a revolution. It was really us against them, and the Paulie speech. It's like, no one else wants us, but our company's better than all those companies put together. And guys would wrestle above their means. Like, there was guys that were the best that they ever were in ECW. You know, that they went anywhere else and just failed. But there, they were somebody, and they were working, and it was working, you know?
Yeah, like, you know, putting turd polish on guys, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But they would start to feel like, okay, this is, like, I like this polish, and I can live with this polish. And then when they left ECW, there was, like, you know, just a turd again, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, so it was a real special place. But, and it can never be duplicated again, because it was, you know, like Kiss with the makeup or the Beatles or Nirvana. It's just, it was a product of its time. People were just waiting for something. If you were a wrestling fan in the 90s, everything else kind of sucked. You know, there's something that you mentioned that's kind of funny that I agree with to an extent. You're talking about the Attitude Era and what everyone talks about the Attitude Era. But a lot of the stuff in the Attitude Era wasn't all that great.
Wait, I said that?
Well, I read somewhere that you mentioned something like people talk about the Attitude Era. But
oh, like before. Yeah, I think, because a few people asked me that. Mm. But, well, I got kind of lampooned a little bit by a few people, like, dude, can't believe you said that. You talked all this trash. And I'm like, I didn't talk any trash. Like, what I was saying, taking, you know, they take one little bite of what you're saying. And the point I was trying to make was that you don't have to have a PG-13 or rated R product to have a good wrestling show.
Right.
You know, you don't need a bunch of, you know. But yeah, a lot of that back then, you know, was like really.
I'll say it myself. A lot of the Attitude Era sucked.
Yeah,
I'll say it right now. I mean, a lot of it was great, but I still remember Mae Young gave birth to a hand.
Yeah, like, what is that? If that happened today, people would be like, oh, this crappy WWE writing. Yeah, but,
well, and they said it then, but because it's 15 years ago, like, there was the Attitude Era that was amazing, and there was the other part of it that was kind of crappy. That's every era of every company has that element to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think people look back sometime and kind of remember just the good. It's like an ex-girlfriend. Oh, she was so hot. Yeah, but then she ripped off your money and banged your brother, so she ain't all that hot.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, there was a moment there where everybody was here, like, at the same time. You were here for that. It would have been, like, you know, like the WrestleMania 17, kind of?
Yeah.
Like, 2000, 2001. Like, you, Eddie, Benoit, Taker, Hunter, Austin, Rock, Dudley's, Edge and Christian, Hardy's, dude, and, like,
Mick,
probably Mick,
Angle.
Angle. Like, yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, it was
everybody. Yeah. Like, unreal to think about that.
It's amazing. If you look at some of those cards, like you said, because you had the guys that were really popular and over, and then you had all these other guys that were coming in at the peak of their careers, like you mentioned, like, you know, guys like myself or Eddie and Dean and those type of guys, Benoit. So when we came here, there was 12, 15, 20 guys that you could put in the main event any night, and they had years of experience. They were over. They could work with anybody. And they had a storyline and a character and an angle. It was a real interesting time. Like, once again, probably won't be able to do that again because the drawing guys from Japan and, you know, ECW and Mexico and, you know, Europe, they don't really exist because those territories have closed or they're smaller now, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy to think of because you could take, like, any of those, like, dozen guys I mentioned and, like, they can main event a house show. Any day of the week, you could have 12 house show crews running at the same time.
That's
if
right.
You had that,
you know,
at least
that's
one
right.
guy in the main event, you know.
So. And that's why it was so important that when you guys came in as the Shield, you guys got the perfect push as a new act, but you were worthy of it. But there's a lot of times new acts come in and they'll be pushed for a bit and then they get kind of pushed aside and people forget about them or they start losing a lot or whatever. But the Shield was pushed. In my opinion, possibly the best push in years, like maybe like a Taker thing, or right from the start, you guys got a chance and never really had anything stupid happen to you, at least as far as I can remember.
No, I mean, yeah, there were maybe a few, you know, tiny little storms we had to weather here and there. But there are a few reasons for that worked out so well was... One, I think it was because it was the three of us. Because that does happen. It seems like guys come in, as soon as their initial storyline kind of fades out, either they don't have anything else, or... And I feel like that's going to happen more, you know, not to get too off topic, but I feel like that's going to happen more with, like, as they bring up NXT guys, teach them how to work, teach them how to do a TV match, give them an entrance, give them music, they know... They do their routine entrance. They do, and they're like an act, and they're like a McDonald's toy. They're a very pre-packaged product, and they'll come on TV. They'll get over, and then they won't know how to swim from there.
Bingo!
Which is, I'm
because they don't have the experience of how to continue to stay over or to get over in the first place.
Yeah, and well, I mean that's all a great thing, and you know we'll be used to create many big stars and so forth. I was formed in the world. Through real life experience and the in and out of wrestling. And like, I'm a real life living, breathing. The person that you see on TV is me,
is you.
Essentially, you know, who's created from the 10, 12, whatever year journey that it took to get here.
Right.
And,
I
can swim from, you know, whatever.
You weren't only getting wrestling experience, you're getting life experience too.
Yeah.
Being in all these places. So continue, so you can still swim on your own because you've done it before.
Yeah, with our thing, we didn't know what it was going to be. We just show up, and it's like, the original concept was, essentially we were just, you know, protectors of the CM Punk and the title. Because he was on a long, long heel run with the belt. And, you know, needed to, I think, it was right when Ryback was getting hot, and it was like, we need guys to throw in people's way and, you know, basically give them, you know, a gang of, like a bunch of heaters kind of thing.
Right.
So that was like the original concept, but there wasn't much thought put into it. And
why you three guys? Was that ever discussed? Or they just said three is best and this guy, and that guy? Or had you been working together in FCW at all?
No, we're completely, me and Seth were kind of like the guys there. And... Oos was like he was their, you know, prime project kind of guy, but he's a lot less experienced. And,
right, that was his first territory, basically.
Yeah, and...
Roman.
You know, I've heard different varying...
Stories
about exactly how everybody, you know, kind of got picked for it and stuff. So I don't know. I just know that we were there, and they were like, here's what's going to happen, you know. And eventually we'd all would become our own guys and stuff, but just nobody knew how we were going to get there. And you know how it is here sometimes. It's just like day to day, week to week. There's no huge long term plan. So we really, me and Seth, I think in particular, had huge chips on our shoulder by that point. Because, you know, I was starting to get frustrated by not getting utilized, you know, and just sitting on the sidelines when you want to be doing stuff and you want to, you know, whet your appetite and you want to, you know, you just want to get in the game, you know, just on the sidelines. I want to get in the game. You know, Seth had the same feeling. I think he felt insulted being in developmental for that long. Mm-hmm. And Roman's looking at it like, you know, I got an opportunity to cash a lottery ticket, more or less. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he's got a family and stuff, and, you know, he's got a building for his future. You know, so we all took it very seriously. Like, this is our shot. Like, nobody's going to screw this up for us.
Yeah.
And we all had a respect for each other and a like of each other. Not that we were all buddies who hung out a lot. And, you know, we're all so different, too, which I think was what made it really cool, because, you know, we're not comparable to each other.
That's
we're
right.
all apples, oranges, and bananas, you know. So, but we all were like, this is our shot. And we all trust each other and believe in each other. And we know that, like, we went into it with like a really an us against the world. Like, we got each other's backs. Like, we'll fight the battles we need to fight together. Mm-hmm. Like, if you got heat with Seth, you got heat with me. Mm-hmm. If you got heat with Roman, you got heat with me. If you got heat with me, you got heat with these two guys.
Great.
And we don't care if everybody hates it. And we were warned a little bit, like, you guys are going to come in and take out a lot of top guys. Guys might not. Some guys might be a little resistant to this whole thing. And it was like a screw everybody. And, you know, we were pasting dudes when we first, from our very first night in, I remember Punk kind of pulling us aside and being like, and Ryback was, you know, new and coming up at the time, too. And he's like, you know, people are going to be in his ear and telling him not to sell for you. And this is your first appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Beat the crap out of him. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, all I needed to hear. And I was like, oh, yeah. Somebody might be in Ryback's ear. Like, and then, so this is our mentality going forward every night for months. Was, like, somebody might be in this guy's ear telling him not to sell for us and whatever. And yada, yada. And I'm like, you're taking money out of my pocket and trying to, this is my
future.
So screw everybody. We were like, we were beating the crap out of dudes. Like, that very first night, we couldn't get to the ring fast enough. We're like tripping on each other and just pasting dudes, just laying crap in so hard. And dudes are getting black eyes and, you know, lips are busted. We got these giant heavy boots on we're not used to yet. I mean, we're just destroying dudes. You know?
Yeah, right.
So, like, that was like the mentality. We're like, we're going to beat the crap out of everybody. But I think that intensity and that physicality is what made that initial push with us.
I think
that's
why it worked, too. Because whenever, I mean, there was a time when someone would be in the ring doing a promo, and then your music would play, and people would pop. Like, uh-oh, something's going to happen. You know, and of course, the guy would wait in the ring until you came down there, and, you know, whoever it was, whether it was Ryback or Cena or whatever. It was a real, like, almost hearing the shattering glass with Austin years earlier when you heard that, here we go, whatever it was. People were like, oh, someone's going to get their ass kicked or something's going to happen. It was exciting.
Yeah, you know, that's cool to have, like, you know, trademark stuff like that.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, that's right.
Like, that's one of the, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow or whatever, then I'll be a part of WWE history in that, at least, you know, that, like,
right.
You know, the Shield thing, the come down and attack them was like a thing, you know, so.
Yeah, it was a thing that people look forward to. There's a big part of the show.
I never thought about that until just now.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And then when you guys had your matches, I mean, you guys were a great unit, especially I think about when you were working with maybe Usos and Daniel Bryan, maybe, or I'm sure there's a lot of other ones that you can throw out there.
Every combination of every six-man tag on planet Earth you could think of. But, like, we, two and three six-mans, like, every week, it seemed like. So it started to become, like, a challenge to, like, you know, make them all different and keep it fresh. Luckily, we had Brian in a lot of those to, like,
what a great performer he is.
Oh, yeah, so good. And, you know, Punk in a lot of them to, like, you know, I remember just thinking, trying to think of all these different things Brian could do. Like, you know, just, I mean, like, thinking of Brian's comebacks for him, you know, because we're trying to make it, keep it as interesting as possible. So to where they get so ridiculous, but it's like the fourth week in a row. It's like, dude, why don't you double drop kick us and then run over here, hit him, run over here, hit him, dive on him, jump on him, do that. And Brian's like, Jesus, you know, okay, well, that's a lot of running around for me, but okay, you know. So,
yeah,
we had that, we had that, like, workhorse mentality. You know, we were like on house shows, tours, whatever it was, we were like, we're going to be the best guys on the show every night.
Mm-hmm. And you pretty much were, I'd say, you know, at least match-wise, you know.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, so I'm here with Dean Ambrose. What was the peak of the Shield? Was there a certain angle that you guys did where it was like, I'm trying to think of some of the guys that you worked with.
I think our peak, if there was a peak, was probably our last night as a unit. You know, because I think that is the cool part because, you know, a lot of people would be like, oh, they could have had a longer run and they should have gotten so much more and they stopped it when it was at its peak.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of like the... In retrospect, probably the best time to do it because mm-hmm. there was never any downswing for us. We had a match with Evolution, and
went
like I think we did like the clean sweep thing of Evolution, which nobody expected, and like an elimination match,
and Hunter, it was like Orton, and
Batista. You can't get any higher than that.
Right,
take out Randy, Dave, and Hunter. Like we're, you know what I mean? It was like we were on top of the world kind of
thing.
I think it was in Chicago too. So that was. That was it. There's nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. So,
when you first were told that the Shield was going to break up, were you resistant to it?
No, there was no resistance because what we would have been. Because, I mean, we just got off a European tour where we were kind of headlining the tour. And, like, we're starting to see merch kind of start taking off and really starting to hit our stride kind of as, like, baby faces. And, like, it's really starting to work. And we're like, oh, man, this is, like, a big deal. This is going good. Like, yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. We're, like, ready to just, like, roll in the spoils, right? Yeah. We're like, yeah, we earned this, you know? And, you know, we've gone in and, you know, the three of us and protested everything. If we don't like something, you know, it's like we were like terrors to them because you know, oh god, the Shield's not gonna like this. Oh god, you know, and then 2 seconds later we're in the office. Yeah, we don't like this, you know, kind of thing.
You're talking not to the right guy with that. Man.
Not that we're like jerks, but you know,
but you're standing up for yourself, man.
Yeah, like they wanted us to. I think it was like our second pay per view or third pay per view. It was like right before. Our first WrestleMania,
mm-hmm.
and it was like a six-man on a pay-per-view, and the finish was, you know, Cena over with the schmutz. Mm-hmm. And we're like, what? As soon as we go down to John, we're just like everybody else because that's what he does to everybody else. And there'll be a time where we'll do that all day, and that's fine, but, like, we're...
Not now.
It's not today. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why are we even here? Yeah, so we were all like, we went into that pay-per-view that day like, we're not doing it. Mm-hmm. More or less. I mean, we didn't have to because there was enough
options.
There was enough people on our side and stuff, and you know, it was brought up. You know,
gotcha.
But it was like one of those things where like we were always, you know, on the same side and like one for all, for one. Like if we didn't like something, it'd be like, nope, not happening. Because there's three of us, and mm-hmm. it's hard to gang up on all three of us. So I mean, we gang up on people to get our way, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, but they knew, I think, that if they told us, yeah, we're gonna break this up, because they, you know, did it before and it didn't really kind of work out because they'd always go back to us
mm-hmm.
the breakup, I mean, anyway.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think if they'd have told us beforehand, like, yeah, we're thinking about, you know, just cutting this thing off, that we'd have been like, we wouldn't have seen the forest through the trees kind of thing. We'd have been like, what are you talking about? It's going so good.
We
had new t-shirts out and we're like
mm-hmm.
super popular and like, what's going on? This is going so good. Why? This is not the right time. We got so much more mileage left than this. We would have like gone in and caused a big stink, and it would have been like they would have had to talk us down, yeah. And so it was all decided, and we didn't get told until like right before the show.
Hmm.
It was like, yeah, they like brought us in. It was like dancing everybody, and it was like right to Vince, like not like
yeah,
just Michael right to Vince, just right into the room. Vince says, "This is what we're doing, and here's why." And we knew that there was no, like, fighting it, and we could tell that it had been hidden from us till then. And we're like, all right. And then, you know, explain to us a little bit more, like, oh, okay. I guess that makes sense, yeah. Because, I mean, essentially there was nobody for us to work with at that point. We beat everybody. So, as far as teams.
Do you think they waited until before the show on purpose because they knew you guys would cause a stink or have a time to think about it?
Yeah, because that way there'd be no time for any resistance.
Yeah. Show's starting. Here's what we're doing. You gotta go.
This is happening. So it was like, okay. And then it's figured out from there. But, you know, I mean, it was very, like, abrupt. It was very abrupt to us. Mm-hmm. You know? And we all knew eventually we're all, like, have a million ideas for what we're going to do. We're going to break up and we're going to feud with each other and do this and that. You know, of course, we know that's going to happen. That's what we want to happen. Mm-hmm. We just weren't expecting it that day, you know? So it was like, oh, okay. It was kind of a shock, but
rude awakening sort of thing. Were you a little bit worried at first? I mean, knowing how the company is very much behind Roman Reigns, is, you know, the big man on campus. Were you worried that you and Seth would get lost in the shuffle or would be left as a tag team or something along those lines?
On the one hand, no, because it's like I got here and I'm in a position because
you are.
I'm good
at
what I do.
Yes,
and you know, same thing with Seth. So yeah. I'm always like, I'm gonna be fine. Mm-hmm, you know, it's not a. Like I said, I can swim.
Sure,
you
know? Right.
But at the same time, you also have to be gotta be aware of things like that and things you don't want to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was telling the story. Like I remember, like in we did the Royal Rumble thing, where like last year the Royal Rumble, where Roman came in and you know he got like a record of eliminations and stuff, and then it was gonna be the original idea, and then it was gonna be like we tried to eliminate him,
mm-hmm.
and he held on and came back to eliminate us both. And as soon as I heard that, I went, and I said this to Seth, and he was, like, in complete agreement. So it was like, as soon as me and you together try to eliminate Roman, as soon as those two small guys gang up on the one big guy, we're in a handicap match at WrestleMania, and we're screwed. Mm-hmm. We're going to be a heel tag team. We're going to be working with, like, Los Matadors in 3 months. As soon as the two small guys gang up on the big guy, it was like, lose. Yeah, which we never did because we never got to that, but we always avoided ever doing that in any of our like teasing the breakup kind of storylines because that is exactly what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they knew it or not, I know that that's what would have happened.
Sure, of course.
That, you know, so
in the fans' eyes, that's subtly what they would be thinking anyways.
Yeah. And you know, it's not good for anybody, you know. Mm-hmm. So we were like, we're strongly of the opinion that I go a little bit off the rails and I try to do it on my own. Seth gets mad at me. What was that about? And he didn't have anything to do with it. Roman doesn't know any better. So it's like three different viewpoints, three opposing,
mm-hmm.
you know, three different personalities, which we always try to keep, you know, our own separate roles. And like that was one of those things where it was like, cut everybody in line, go right to Vince. Here's what we're thinking. And he was like, okay, cool. Yeah, do it that way. You know, and we're like, oh, okay. You know, because sometimes it's just way easier if you just go to Vince.
Of course, all the time.
But there are things like that you had to be aware of stuff like
sure.
that. Otherwise,
I think it was really smart though that they had all three of you guys go your own separate ways because they went from a great six-man team to three great single guys. It was the perfect way to do it.
Yeah, I think that was always probably the
always the plan.
Yeah, I think that was always the hope was that you know, but you know, if it was like, well, if we get at least, it was probably they were probably thinking if we get at least one out of the three of them, cool, whichever one it is. But you know, we all knew that we're all can be top dudes. You know,
that's right.
So we're like, we all have huge egos, but then there was no egos in between us because we all know that we all have like a respect for each other in that way. You know that. That kept it together.
But the thing is, too, I mean, whether the plan was for you to be babyface or organically just went that way, you know, the business is all based on timing, and it was not good when Oos got hurt, but when he was out for a couple months, suddenly you were kind of the all eyes are on you, and you really got a chance to get to the next level without really having to worry about being compared to anybody else. And I think, you know, that was one of those beneficial things that just happened by fate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I never pictured in all of our, you know, dream scenarios of, you know, like, we'll break up and we'll feud and whatever, you know, like, I never pictured myself as a babyface.
As a babyface.
Ever. Because every possible scenario of everything, I was always evil. That's how I think everybody pictured it.
You know what's funny? I can honestly say this. I honestly was thinking you're going to be the babyface. Because I thought Seth would be much better as a heel because especially when he went with the authority and all that stuff, it's perfect. Because he's got a gang, he's got a group, he can be the hitman for this. He's got a mission. You had the personality. I just always thought, I bet you that's the guy that's gonna be the baby face.
Oh, well, good call. It worked out that way.
Good call, eh?
Yeah. I wouldn't have fit, like, in the authority where they did
no,
it in the storyline.
Not at all. That Seth is perfect sense. For it.
Yeah.
You know?
So it just worked out okay. But, you know, right around that time, that was when I realized, like, I'm kind of being left to my own devices here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, well, that's great. I'll just do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll see what happens. And, you know, and then whatever I get, whoever I'm working with, whatever, I just try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Really good, and not worry too much about,
yeah,
you know what, you know, I can't control everything. I can only control so much. Mm-hmm. I can only just go out there and not suck, you know. That's all you can do,
right?
Especially, you know, I mean, there's changes and TV scripts, you know, the TV gets rewritten and, you know, plans change and people get hurt and what, like, you can only control so much, you know. I can only go out there and,
well, that's all you're in control. Match,
okay? Yeah, and it might be a segment that's really hard to make work.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you don't suck, that's all you can do. That's all you can control. Just don't suck, you know. You might be doing a sucky thing, but as long as you don't suck, you know, then you can sleep well at night.
A lot of times you have to change things that suck and do the best you can to make them not suck. Exactly, especially in this biz.
Yeah, you
know? Yeah. Couple more things I just wanted to say. How was it for you when you did the Hell in the Cell match, which I thought was a tremendous match of you and Seth? And I know earlier on in the day or in the week, I wasn't there at the time, but kind of there was a debate. Will the last match be Cena and Orton in the Hell in the Cell, or will the last match be Ambrose and Seth in the Hell in the Cell? How was it for you? Well, first off, how early on did you find out you guys would be going on last? And how was that for you to be in your first WWE main event single match on a pay-per-view?
I didn't hear any of the debate or anything. I heard the night before we were on fourth. I said, fine, cool, whatever. Not my job to put this together.
Sure, can't worry about it.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, whatever. You know, and then I heard that day, 5-6 o'clock, we were on our last. So I heard one way and I heard the other way. I don't know what happened.
Basically, you found out that day.
I don't know what happened in the in between or what the arguments were one way or the other. But, you know, it's being able to, you know, I think me and Seth look at it like Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose is as valuable as John Cena versus Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's, you know, they're bigger names and they have more tenure and they, you know, probably have more, you know, they're more well known and so forth. And obviously they have accomplished a lot more. They're bigger superstars and whatever metric you want to measure that in. But to us, we're like, well, this is just as good or better. And like we would, you know, even being, you know, enemies in the ring, we would.
It's fresh.
There'd be a.
It's new.
An unspoken kind of pride in that like, yeah, well, Rollins and Ambrose is every bit as good.
Mm-hmm.
And should be spoken of in the same sentence as Orton versus Cena, you know, to us. So that was cool to be able to be on the same show with them in the Hell in a Cell match. And knowing you're last is kind of a. But, you know, the thing is, it wasn't very weird. It wasn't like, whoa, this is a strange thing. You know, nobody ever. It wasn't like, okay, guys, you're going on last. Now, this is a big deal what we're doing.
Okay.
This is never, it was just like, you're on fourth. Oh, okay. You guys are on last. Oh, okay, cool. It, you know, we're just like kind of part of the team now and kind of. We're so comfortable in that position that, you know, anything else would be weird.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know, so it's like, it's just normal now to me. I mean, that was the only time, you know, I've been in a main event singles match, I guess. But it wasn't weird to me. Or like, I didn't think anything
didn't
of
think
it.
I finally made it.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think anything of it until a couple of days later when a couple of people mentioned it. And yeah, I was like, I guess we were in the main event, weren't we? Well, yeah. And no, there was no Randy, no John. It was just us. Oh, okay. Cool. I didn't even really register, you know. It was just another day at the office kind of thing, I guess.
Were you happy with the match?
Yeah. I mean, you can never... I'm one of those, you know, probably the same way. Like, you never be 100% satisfied with something. And if you think about it too long or if you dare to go back and watch something, then you'll just nitpick it apart and you'll hate it.
Yeah.
So I had a couple goals with it. Was just like... I wanted it to not feel like a WWE match.
In what way?
Well, if you watch, like, John and Randy's on that, so it felt like a good WWE main event where they
finisher,
counter, same, you know, the stuff. And, you know, they've kind of created and popularized and kind of what the WWE main event style is, I guess.
Right.
So, you know, but I wanted it to feel different. I wanted it to, like, feel a little bit dirtier and grungier and a little bit more, you know, especially because it's, you know, it's Hell in a Cell. It's supposed to be, like, an ugly thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted it to be ugly at certain points. Like, a little bit uncomfortable. Like, people are getting hurt right now.
Hmm.
Not, people aren't smiling or doing trademark things.
Just trying to survive.
Two dudes are, like, trying to kill each other right now. Like, this is a little bit uncomfortable. I just wanted it to have a very stripped-down feel was kind of my vision for it. And I think we kind of accomplished that, you know? So,
was it your idea to start on top of the cage?
Yeah. Which, why wouldn't you, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you could...
It's never been done before.
Oh, it totally has. Totally ripped off.
To start on top of the cage?
Yeah, Mick Foley started on top of the cage.
Oh, he started on top? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's how... That was...
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Really? How do you not remember that?
I don't know.
Come on.
Too many bumps. He got dropped on my head too much.
Yeah, that's the old,
you kind of... It was a homage to Mick then?
Well, I mean, dude, just completely ripped off. I'm like, well, because, you know, how do you get a... How do you get out of the cell? Well, I don't know, just start on top of the cell. Why wouldn't I start on top of the cell? And you could debate for hours, which I did with myself and others. You know, do you do that at the end or do you do that at the start? Because sometimes, you know, I thought of a match ahead. It was like on an indie show. It was like a match with a guy named Jimmy Jacobs, and we're on this match. And we get there earlier, and there's a balcony in the building, and the guy who was the booker at the time. I was like, hey, well, you know, we got this balcony. You know, if you guys got like a hardcore match or something, you know, you can, if you can figure out something to do out of the balcony, that might be really cool because it's there. And we're like, well, I'm looking at the balcony. And, you know, it's pretty high. I don't know. It's like a 15, 20-foot balcony. I'm like, and I had a vision in my head kind of the match already. And I'm like, oh, I got to figure out a way to get up there. And like, now I got to cut out a giant chunk of my match to dedicate it to this balcony thing just to do the balcony. And I'm like, yeah, why don't we just start with the balcony? Very first thing. So like we did, like I came out and then he just jumped out of the balcony into the ring like a surprise attack.
Gotcha.
So he didn't make his, he made his entrance by jumping off the balcony, which is the exact opposite of what you're normally
what
supposed
to do. You're supposed to build to the balcony.
Yeah. And remember the guy's booker, Gabe, was like, well, then what are you going to do? And I'm like, whatever we want, because everybody's going to be on their feet because they just saw a balcony dive.
Yeah.
It's over. Game over. We got them hooked.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need to just come out swinging with a... You know, I don't care. I don't think you should have a formula. You know, this thing is everybody's, you know, there's a TV formula and a WWE formula, and there's such a formula. And I think the fans get conditioned to that formula, which probably makes it harder to, you know, shock them after a while because they... kind of get the formula. Like I like, you know, I don't know if any of my matches are ever any good, but I like people to think at all times anything might happen, whether it makes any sense or not. I like to just throw something in that doesn't make any sense on purpose, just because nobody sees it coming and like, oh, that didn't make any sense. Why didn't it? Why? Because I can get away with kind of anything because I just felt like grabbing a chair. I don't know why, because I felt like it. Why did you put him in a... Why did you do that? I don't know. Why did you go here? I don't know. Like, I like to always occasionally throw a left instead of a right, or go right when I'm supposed to go left, just because...
It's a great point, though.
Because yeah, keep people on their toes, you know what I mean? Like, when the last... You know, if you know... If you watch enough wrestling and you're watching a match, you can kind of tell... What's going to happen next?
Baby
almost
shine,
all the time.
Heel heat.
Yeah, you know where you're at. You know you're not. Finish. You know the match isn't going to end until Kofi's done his hand slap gimmick, or you know, or until John does the
can't see
thing. Yeah. Yeah, you know it's not over until you see it. But like, you know, real fights and boxing or in UFC or in anything can happen at any time. A match could just end. A dude could grab his leg and break it, you know? Like
There's a great example of this in All Japan. I'm sure you watched the Japanese wrestling when they were having those classic matches with like Kawada and Misawa and Kobayashi. They'd have like these 45-minute, 60-minute main events at Budokan every time. Classic, mm-hmm. five-star. But the crowd would never react to the first 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes because they knew there's no way it's going to end this early. Then one night they did a match. Can't remember who it was, a title match, and they ended it in 2 minutes and 45 seconds.
I feel like I know what you're talking about.
And the whole crowd was so like, what? And after that, every time there was a false finish throughout any title match, they knew this could be it because it could end at any time.
Yeah, I love stuff like that.
Me too, yeah.
I love just keeping, you know, throwing out the rule book kind of thing, you know, like.
What you said earlier about why does there always have to be a formula? It's a great, great piece of advice.
People don't remember, you know, people don't go home after they came out to a show and they're not going, man, I went to this awesome show, dude, where they had this great, well-paced match where the two guys started off with a lockup and then they built to a drop kick and then man, it was awesome. And I was sitting here, I high-fived my friend, we chugged beer, I had a popcorn, I bought a T-shirt, and then they finally built to their crescendo, mm-hmm. you know, at the perfect time. No, they remember like people are going home tonight in Glasgow and they're going, dude. Bray Wyatt went through the table, man. It was awesome. Yeah, and Jericho and Ambrose did air guitars with chairs.
Chair and a candlestick.
Yeah, and brother fell off the top rope, hit his head on the floor. I think he might have cracked his head open. It was cool. That's what they remember. They just remember big, stupid.
You're right. Gaga and big moves. Yeah,
yeah, so I'm not saying, you know, never have anything make sense. I love when stuff makes perfect sense, but, you know, I don't.
But by throwing away the formula, that can make sense too.
Yeah. Did you like Lesnar and Cena at SummerSlam? You were there, right?
Yes, I was there.
Yeah, you were there.
Yes, I did. I did like it because nobody expected John Cena, the hero, to get his ass kicked for 15 minutes straight.
Right.
I thought that was very well done.
Cool.
Really liked it.
I loved it.
Really liked
it. I don't know.
A lot of people second guessing it, but I thought it was great. And also, I give John credit for going for it because a lot of guys in his position over the years would not have.
Yeah, you know like I mean? Who would go like, most top guys in history would be more likely to lose in 2 minutes than to just get beat up for 15 minutes.
What you said earlier, it's uncomfortable. It's like this guy just dying, he's getting killed.
Yeah, I loved it. I was watching it from the box and it was very uncomfortable and I loved it. I don't know if people liked it, people have problems with whatever. I just thought it was so different and so unexpected that I loved it. I was like, that's how you do it, man. You just do something ridiculous because everybody was talking about it the next day. They didn't, you know, they didn't go through the paces of the normal back and forth because you can see that anywhere. You can see it on the WWE Network.
That's why
you
worked.
See a million of those matches. Like
German suplex after German suplex. He's only given 3. Now he's given these like 16 or whatever it was. It's like, oh my God, like enough.
Yeah.
Stop the fight.
Because you definitely went home that night and went, dude, what happened in the SummerSlam? Oh, dude.
You're not
he gave him 16 freak. It was ridiculous.
He
kicked
John Cena's ass. Cena's the guy who he's the Superman. They always say, wasn't no Superman that night.
Yeah.
You know? And once again, builds Brock as a killer, builds Cena as a sympathetic babyface, which you don't see a lot of. And then even the next night, he came out and beat up the entire Wyatt family. And there was people so angry, getting tweets and texts. It's like, are you mad that you just lost to Wyatt and then Cena just beat up? No. Because that's the story that we're telling. And everybody plays a part in every night's story.
Yeah.
You know, and tomorrow night, Wyatt's guys will kill somebody else. But for this night, Cena needed a big comeback. I think Vince felt that. You know, I love stuff like that, man. You know, why not?
Yeah, I remember we were watching, we were in FCW, we were watching, you know, some like SmackDown from 2002 or 2003 or something. It was like a 6-man or a tag or something with like Edge and Eddie and Ray.
The SmackDown and Six.
Yeah, that kind of crew. With we were watching
Benoit Chavo Angle.
Yeah, probably. We were watching some of that kind of stuff, and they were doing like get told all this stuff. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't go to the floor if you're in the first match. Don't do this if you're whatever. And and they were just doing everything. They were making a million save. You know, be a. You only get one save. Don't bury the ref. You got all these. And they were doing everything. Mm-hmm. There was a million saves. They were outside of the ring. They were doing a million dives. And the place was going nuts the whole time. It was just dudes who were really good wrestlers just getting let loose and just doing whatever.
Having
and
fun.
Just film it. Mm-hmm. Here's the wrestling. Film it. Let's not worry about it or try to overthink it or overanalyze it. Just film it. And it's awesome. And we were just going like, these guys don't give a blah, you know, they don't give a blah, blah. They don't care. They're just going for it. Like, what? Oh, that must have been, I don't know, you know, I'm sure you guys, when you're like, if you're wrestling like Benoit or Eddie or whatever on a pay-per-view, I mean, you guys probably kind of do whatever you want, right? As far as formula.
Sometimes we had, like, you know, time constraints and stuff. But the thing that was so cool about the SmackDown years, and I wasn't there because I was on Raw, was Heyman was in control. And he had total control. Like, Vince obviously signed off on stuff, but as far as the matches and stuff, and Paul with the Kool-Aid and the attitude of we have to be the better show, because there was a real Raw versus SmackDown. It was like two separate teams. We are better than Raw. You can just hear him talking right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think he would let those guys, you guys, go out there for 20
minutes.
They're lazy. They're stuck within the confines of the WWE system. You go out there, be you guys for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, three segments, four segments, and tear down the house. That's all I'm asking. Just steal the show. And that's why they were able to do that, because like you said, there's no chains. And they all knew each other. They're all great workers. They all had great chemistry. Man, what a pleasure. What more do you need, you know?
Yeah, right. It's
kind of, you know, it's kind of what you were talking about with the chemistry you had with some of the guys that you worked with the Shield and with Daniel and Usos and, you know, CM Punk and those guys. But dude, I want to ask you the one last question. It's kind of a hard one. What is your favorite match that you've ever had, or a few of them, throughout your career?
Oh, that I've been in?
Yeah, that you've been in.
Oh, that's so hard. It's hard for a couple of reasons. One, because I don't like to be so self-righteous, like, oh, this match is so great.
No, but when you left the ring, you felt like that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's like they're your babies, you know? You can't sure. like one more than the other. So,
is there a few of them? Even ones outside of the WWE?
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick a couple here, would be our first ever match was a TLC match on a pay-per-view.
Wow.
It was us, the Shield versus Brian Kane and Ryback. Mm-hmm. It was a TLC match. It was the first time we ever wrestled.
Wow.
We just done a few weeks of beatdowns or whatever. So, you know, there's a certain expectation for a TLC match, and it's got to be good. And there's a lot that can go wrong because there's a lot of moving parts, you know. So
one big, long chain.
Yeah. And, yeah, that was one of those things where it's like, this is a Hail Mary shot in the dark. Hopefully this goes really well. And it went really, really well. Mm-hmm. And it was in the first show ever in Barclays Center in Brooklyn. Mm,
Brooklyn.
So we kind of, that'll kind of be like, you know, one of my favorite buildings always, because it kind of like opened that building up, you know, with a sick match, you know. And so that, you know, that'll always have a special kind of place. You know, there's so many untelevised ones. Probably my favorite match I've ever had with Seth, one of them wouldn't have ever been televised. It was this past time we went to Japan. And it was
really in Tokyo?
Yeah, it was Sumo Hall. It was the second night that was sold out that Claudio is claiming wasn't sold out. He's the only wrestler I've ever seen that's like, no, it wasn't sold out. There was at least 100. If you could see the
top.
No,
it was not sold out.
And I'm like, dude, don't take this away from me. I've been telling people that I worked sold out Sumo Hall in Tokyo. You're the only guy who's there'd be 20 people there, and oh, sold out, brother.
Yeah, exactly, brother.
Oh, hanging from the rafters. Like a freaking Cesaro.
It was not sold out.
No. Yeah, but
shut up.
That was, we've wrestled a million times, but that was like one of those things where it's cool when you go to these other countries and stuff, like we're in Europe now or whatever, and you feel a place you've never been or haven't been much, and you feel like a kind of a special connection with the people for some reason that's different than the States. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because we don't come through here a lot.
I think that's it, a lot of it.
Or, yeah, and that, you know how the Jap. And, you know, when you go on the Japan tours, it's cool because that's the one place where you can kind of do a little bit different psychology and do some different stuff that doesn't work, that kind of goes over people's heads, or that they don't, or just isn't the best route to go.
Right.
You know, if you're in, you know, Duluth, Minnesota, as opposed to Tokyo. Mm-hmm. So, like, we and Seth have a million spots and a million stuff that we do, and, you know, a bazillion greatest
Isn't
hits.
Isn't that great when you have that? Like, let's do the backdrop spot.
Yeah.
Let's do the hip toss spot.
And we've been doing house shows for, you know, every night for weeks, and then, you know, we get to Tokyo, and then we kind of realize, and I remember, I think it was like, I can't remember who was in the main event, but it was something where we were like, we were right before intermission, and we're like, we're gonna kill the rest of the show. And it was like an unspoken, like, sold out.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not
Sumo
sold
Hall.
Out.
We're under the belief that it's sold out. We know this crowd's gonna be. So it was like everything we've ever done with like three more twists added to it. It was like the most longest, complicated, exhausting match ever, but like it all just went perfectly. It was like one of those nights that are like that night was probably the most over I've ever felt anywhere in my life. Like I felt like, because in Japan too, where you can add in like some comedy spots and some kind of self-deprecating comedy spots where you screw up on purpose kind of thing. And you're like, oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. And, British stuff. And
the fact that it's Japan
that was probably the night where I felt like I've had the closest connection with any audience where you really every little tug on the string, they're going with you and you're just kind of like, where I felt beloved and welcomed and they're with you
respected
the whole time. Yeah. And it was just like one of those special lightning in the bottle kind of things, you know. And we work 300 nights a year, you know. I mean, most of the stuff isn't film. TV sometimes is the worst stuff because it's short and it's for TV and it's for the angle. And
it's very rare to have a great match on TV, you know, very rare. Unless they give you two or three segments. I'm not going to say impossible, but it's very rare.
Yeah, it's harder.
Yeah,
sure.
Much harder. There's a lot of restrictions, you know. Well, cool, man. Yes, it's great to talk to you. It's so.
What's yours?
Mine?
Yeah.
Gun to head, I'd have to say Michaels Jericho ladder match at Unforgiven 2008 for the world title.
The
reason why is because the match was amazing in my opinion, but it was the journey that got us there. Because Sean and I were working. Sean and Batista were working. I was the guest referee. I was supposed to turn on Sean that night, and that would be my big heel turn. And then next month we'd have a pay-per-view match, and that would be it. We both knew that wasn't right. We kind of, whatever happened, changed the finish a bit. And there was a little mystery. Sean tweaked his knee. I wasn't sure if he was really hurt or not. That's what kicked off the Jericho hypocrite promo. And then it was April, and then May, and then June, then July, then August. That's when I hit his wife, punched his wife, Rebecca, for real by mistake. But that took it to a completely different world. Then it was September, then October. We had a title match, main event on a pay-per-view, ladder match that was the culmination of this amazing 6 or 7 month feud that was never supposed to be. And that's why I love that match, because that storyline was the best thing I've ever done in my career. And that was the culmination of it in the main event, you know. And the cool thing was even Metallica's All Nightmare Long was the theme song for the
movie. Yeah.
So that was even better.
Oh, yeah, and your buddies with everybody. Just name-dropping. Just been name-dropping.
Yeah. I'm just telling you who's been on my show.
Hey, kids, I was just hanging out with Slash and Axel. Yeah, it was great.
But there's actually stories about it. It's not name-dropping if you have a story.
Yeah.
Dude, thanks, man. This has been awesome.
No, totally, man. Anytime.
Very, very cool. Let's go downstairs and have some La Pour.
Oh, the La Pour.
La Pour. That's it, La Pour.
It did me in last night.
Grey Goots.
We love you. Let me tell you something, people. You have made us feel awesome tonight.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
God gave rock and roll to you!
Hey, thanks to Dean Ambrose, man. What a cool interview that was. So much fun. I really enjoyed it. Thanks to all of you for listening. I know that you have thousands of podcasts to schwoz from, and I appreciate you schwozing mine. I appreciate you following me. I appreciate you checking out the Cinderblock Party Tour. If you live in St. Pete, Tampa, come check us out tonight at the State Theater. And if you live in Toronto, this Sunday, I will be at Heroes in Woodbridge, Ontario for a meet and greet, an autograph signing, a book signing, and a live Talk is Jericho podcast. My friend Damien from Effed Up Canadian Band is going to be interviewing me in front of all of you, and I guarantee you will dig this. You will dig it. He's going to ask me some great questions. He's going to be digging this deep. Nothing is off limits. We're going to have some fun with that. That's Sunday, December 14th at 3 p.m. 39
101 Highway 7 in Woodbridge, Ontario, across from the Chapters Indigo. Go to woodbridgeheroes.ca for ticket information and for all info about that. And, of course, on Monday, I will be returning to Raw for one night. I'll be the general manager, and I'm gonna stir some crap up, man. I'm going to rule with an iron fist. All right, you know I can rule with an iron fist, and I ain't talking about Motorhead. So listen, don't forget too. Next week, episode number 100 is coming up. Jeez, it's a lot of pressure. I don't have anybody. I mean, I have no ideas on who I can get to be my 100th guest.
We wanna do a little number for you now.
But until I figure that out, I'm gonna do some Christmas shopping. You can too. If you want to finish up your holiday shopping, you know where to go. Say it with me now. Amazon, of course. You know how to use my links. Talk is Jericho. You know how to do it. Say it with me. Go to podcast1.com and click the Keep a Podcast free banner. Podcast1.com and click on the Keep a Podcast free banner. Podcast1.com and click on the Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links, UK, USA, and Canada. I bet there's someone on your gift giving list who would love to have a copy of the new Fozzy record. Do you want to start a war? Or maybe a copy of my new book, Best in the World, at what I have no idea. Or maybe you want to read Paul Stanley's book, for example, Face the Music, A Life Exposed. It's a great rock and roll memoir. It doesn't matter what you buy. If you do it through my Amazon links, Amazon will kick back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden challenges. You're just getting your shopping done, helping me out in the process. Easiest way to support the show. All right. That's it for this week. Thank you so much to Dean Ambrose. He was amazing. Until next Wednesday, I want you to stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. See you next week for my special 100th episode podcast.
Some people might have a little rock and roll pneumonia.
And who's the guest going to be? I think if you have a brain with the clues I've been leaving, people have been asking me since I started the show, who is your dream podcast guest? And I've given one name, and I got that guy for my 100th episode, and I'm so stoked, so excited. My biggest hero in life, besides my father, I've been trying to get this guy forever. I finally made it happen. He's one of my heroes. He's the hero. He's the guy. And if you know me, then I'm sure you know exactly who I'm talking about. So enjoy the weekend. See you back here next Wednesday for episode 100, where the guest will be...
You want some more?
Yeah. The star child himself, Paul Stanley, will be here for episode 100 in one of the best interviews I've ever done. I got him, man. Paul Stanley, episode 100. We'll see you on Wednesday. And a big, yeah, people! How you doing, people?
How you doing, people?
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.
When you're ready to buy a car, True Car is changing car buying forever. Yes, True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Every day, True Car users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings, and True Car users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, download the True Car mobile app or go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Then it's the third step, very simple. Take your guaranteed savings certificate to the True Car certified dealer for a better hassle-free car buying experience. Now, some features are not available in all states, but with True Car, you can save time, save money, and never overpay. Never overpay. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the True Car mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today. Go do it now.
Gearheads know that some projects need so many parts, it feels like you need a whole storage unit just to store them. That's what eBay Motors' 122 million parts are for. Think of it as your virtual parts garage. They've always got the right fitment at the right prices. Use the eBay Motors app or visit ebaymotors.com. Let's ride.
At Metro by T-Mobile, you can save more now that you need it the most. Get one line of unlimited 5G for just $40, period. Taxes and fees included. That's the lowest price in prepaid. Plus, choose from the largest selection of free 5G phones from brands you love, like Samsung. Switch now and save more. Only at Metro. If congested, the fraction of users greater than 35 gigabytes per month may notice reduced speeds, and Metro customers may notice reduced speeds versus T-Mobile due to prioritization. Video streams and SD requires eligible port-in. See store for details.